Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. As Kathleen said, from the U.S., let's move to the other side of the world, where we have Mount Everest, and where somehow the definition of food security is completely different than the food security we are talking in this country. This presentation is made on behalf of several of my colleagues, Dr. T.P. Tiwari, a cropping systems agronomist working for CIMIT in Bangladesh, Mr. Nirmal Gadal, who is a maize agronomist based in Nepal, Dr. Arun K. Joshi, who is a wheat breeder based in Nepal, and Dr. Sharma, who works for a sister center of CIMIT, is called ICARDA, and he's based in Tashkent. What I would like is to share with you some of the participatory approaches that we are using to promote the adoption of the new maize and wheat varieties, but as well as the new crop management technologies that CIMIT has developed in partnership with several countries in South Asia. For those of you who are not completely aware about South Asia, it's a very challenging region, not only because the high population and high level of poverty, but also because the many biotic, abiotic, and policy constraints that affect wheat and maize production. CIMIT, the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center, we have been working, we have been partners of countries in South Asia for the last more than 45 years, I will say. And Dr. Norman Borlaug, the Nobel Peace Prize winner in 1970 for the wheat variety that he developed in Mexico and were imported or exported to India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, South Asia, and quadruplicated the production, and he got the Nobel Prize. We work, or we coordinate, or we help countries in South Asia from our base in Nepal, Kathmandu office. And we have been there, or that office has been there for the last 25 years. Although we have contributed to the success of improving maize and wheat production in these countries, and resulting in a reduction in the imports of these two crops, we should not ignore the saying where Dr. Borlaug said that the seriousness of or magnitude of the world food problem should not be underestimated. Recent successes in expanding wheat, rice, and maize production in Asian countries offers the possibility of buying only 20 to 30 years of time. In other words, we are just delaying any problem. And let me use the example of India, one of the second most populated country in the world. Projections by the year 2020 say that from the 1 billion present population, it will have about 1.4 or 1.3 billion by the year 2020. The production from 2000, about 70 million tons, it will increase to almost, it will require almost 90 million tons of wheat. And this will require that the productivity, the yield per hectare, will have to almost double from 2.1, 2.2 to almost 4 tons per hectare. It's a very challenging task. In maize, 80%. Is grown under rain-fed production with yield less than half of irrigated maize. 3.5% of the maize demand is growth. Increases in rain-fed maize area at the rate of 1.8% per year. And there are a combination of stress factors from drought, heat, water logging, and other foliar diseases like downy mildews and other diseases, including stem borer insect pest. But besides these biotic and abiotic constraints, what makes our challenge more difficult is that farmers are unaware of the new maize and wheat technologies. In other words, the extension system is quite weak. There is a limited access to improved seed. Seed production is also very under, you know, very weak, and there are very poor marketing opportunities for farmers. Since almost for the last 25 years, we have been implementing what we call participatory varietal selection, where we have, you know, farmers assessing the new technologies. And what we do, we invite them for field days, where they just don't listen to the scientists or the extensionists about what are the new varieties, but we invite them to take a look and give us some quantitative and qualitative assessment about the new varieties that we are trying to promote. And this is done for maize and wheat. Our strategy, research and development strategy, is to work in partnership with coordinated efforts and concerted efforts with national research and development partners. And we do it in a participatory approach. And let me just use this figure, you know, to show how we do it. We follow the mother baby concept, which has been very successful in Africa and other developing countries to promote new technologies. There is a mother trial, which consists of about 12 improved varieties developed by any particular breeding program in each country. And around this mother trial, we have baby trials in a radius of about 10 kilometers. And each of these babies includes one of the improved varieties in the mother plus the local check that farmers grow. We invite farmers to give us the qualitative and quantitative feedback. They grow these trials using their own agronomic interventions. The next year, once we know which is the variety the farmers like, and they tell us why too, we grow it under traditional cultivation and under the recommended agronomic practice, and we grow it side by side with the local variety under the same interventions. And we use the seed grown by these farmers for further seed multiplication through the community-based seed production scheme that I will describe in a few minutes. The idea is just to know which is the variety they like, which farmers like, not what we scientists want to impose. And once we know, we give just, you know, 20, 30 kilograms of seed to each farmer, and they go happily to their villages, and they grow it, and after that, those varieties start spreading to other areas in the country. Let me use this example in the Kathmandu Valley, a valley of about 200,000 hectares. In 4 years that we had this project, we were able to replace one of the Green Revolution varieties called Sonalika or RR21 with the new one of the new varieties like DL1473. These varieties, over the same period of time, they had about 31% yield increase, and this helped farmers, you know, to increase the food security from 61% to 65% to about 71%, a modest 6% increase in those 4 years. And this is food security at the household level. Many times those households consist of 8 to 10 or 12, sometimes even 12 people. Similar trends in Bangladesh over the period of that project. Kanchan, a very old variety, you know, improved variety, but released almost 30 years ago, occupying almost 1 million hectares of wheat in the country. Following this participatory varietal selection approach, we were able to replace it with other varieties like Shatabdi and others. We can show you similar trends in India and in Pakistan, but I wanted to highlight that some of the farmers who had been collaborating in, you know, in this participatory varietal selection, they are now seed producers. They opened their own modest private company. You know, they are producing seed and they are selling this seed to neighboring farmers. And this has helped them to make a profit. For example, in northeastern India, farmers in this state of Assam, they can make up to 8,873, which is about $250, you know, per hectare. And this is profit after they have secured the food security at the household. In maize, we have used what we call community-based seed production, where we give farmers training on how to produce seed at the village level. And this community-based seed production, the objective is to improve access of new varieties to farmers, especially those that live in very remote areas like in the hills of Nepal or in Pakistan. This is managed by the community. A group leader or a contact person and other group members are elected by themselves. We provide training at least 3 times during the season. It is linked to the mother baby scheme that I just described in order to identify the farmers' preferred varieties. And this is linked with seed traders, in other words, trying to find marketing opportunities for this surplus maize and wheat that farmers are producing. What we are trying to do is to complement the efforts of the government, the modest infrastructure and experience and you know, effort they are making in producing seed through this community-based seed production. We work with groups of farmers, giving a special attention to women farmers, and I want to use this Debistan women's farmers, consisting of about 90 women, most of them from the lower caste. I don't know how many of you are familiar with this caste system in South Asia, India, and Nepal. The lowest caste there is the Dalits, or so-called untouchable. Most of these farmers are Dalits, and we provide sowing machines and threshers and provide training, and we help them to produce the seed by themselves. And these Debistan farmers, women's farmers groups, is only one of 174 groups that in 2009, you know, helped us to produce about 664 tons of seed. This 664 tons of seed is only about 10% of the annual requirement in Nepal only. You know, the amount of improved seed that is needed. And, you know, from 2000, from 7 groups, it went to 174, and from 14 tons, went to 664. So you can see that by organizing these groups of farmers, especially women's and Dalits and other lower castes, we were able to at least fulfill the needs of the country by about 10%. There was an impact study assessment, and we can see that there was a major shift in food production. Farmers who had wheat for the whole year, it went from 2002 to 2006, it moved this way. Farmers who had enough seed or enough food from 6 to 11 months also increased, and it decreased with those farmers that had, you know, less than 3 months. Again, Dalits and the higher caste or Brahmins working side by side, and this is one of the achievements of the projects we have there, making them to work together. We have worked with maize intercropping, helping farmers not to grow tomato alone. These are bamboo trees or bamboo sticks, you know, to help the tomato to grow. We tell them, why don't you grow maize intercropped? And the tomato plant uses the maize to grow. Maize ginger, maize soybean. Just to give you an idea, farmers, after they have secured the food security for the household, they can make a profit between $886 per hectare with maize groundnut to about $5,000 with maize ginger. Conservation agriculture is important, and for those of you who are not familiar, it consists of using some technologies that reduce the tillage, keep residues, and use rotations. And the benefits is that cut the production cost, saves water, fuel, soils, reduces gases, emissions, and raise system productivity. And the idea is to move more towards precision agriculture. This is the rice crop harvested, you know, and this is the wheat that is planted without plowing the land. There are other technologies like permanent bed planting, that has many benefits, like saving irrigation water by about 45%, promotes in situ conservation of rainwater, improves crop yields and nitrogen use efficiency, and many other advantages. But I want to highlight the issue that promotes crop diversification. With this technology, farmers are able to intercrop chickpea with mint, wheat with sugarcane, wheat with lentils, maize with fava beans, and other rotations, making this agriculture more profitable. The Chinese hand tractor with a power tiller is well accepted in Nepal. Farmers and development workers and scientists are trained. This is one farm plowed by this lady with this Chinese hand tractor. And in half an hour, she did what these four gentlemen had to do in 8 hours of work. These new technologies have developed what we call the tillage revolution. And now it is estimated that about almost 3 million hectares are grown in the Indo-Gangetic plains with these technologies. Well, if I have to summarize, let me say that maize and wheat are strategic important crops in South Asia. The transfer of technology, systems, and poor marketing are important constraints responsible for low yield in maize and wheat. That the participatory varietal selection, the mother baby approach that I described, has been an effective strategy to promote the adoption of new technologies by resource-poor farmers. And finally, that partnership with farmers has been a key approach to improve food security, livelihoods, and social inclusion. Let me emphasize why partnership is so important, because you may agree with me that at the end of the day, it's not about CIMIT. It's not about any of the ministries of agriculture or the scientists with whom we work there. It is about these guys who are working so hard, and especially for the farmers of the future. Kathleen, back to you.
We have 3 minutes for questions, please.
Excellent question. You know, this scheme, the mother baby that I described here, is to promote the. Can I go back just to show? It's not only to promote the improved varieties, but also. To promote the new resource conservation technology that you are talking about. If you look here, once we identify the variety that farmers like, we grow it under the recommended RCT, or resource conservation technology, zero tillage, bed planting, you know, Chinese hand tractor, whatever, you know, the best agronomic intervention for that particular site. So it is useful. Back to your question, you know, it is useful, this approach is useful not only to promote the new varieties but also the new agronomic interventions. We also consider, you know, look at here is the local variety and also grown under the traditional method of cultivation farmers as well as the new recommended technology. And so farmers can see, seeing is believing, you know, farmers can see objectively. It's different than going with a report, with a histogram, Mr. or Mrs. Farmer, this variety will yield 70% more. They will not believe you. You have to show them in the field. Yes, sir.
I think you're preaching about awareness, but
Yeah, sure. It is a religious belief, you know, a cow is a god for Hindus. And so it is respected especially by those non-vegetarians, you know, they don't eat the cows. They drink the milk of the cows. They drink the milk and the butter and everything, you know. but it is a tradition, it is a religious issue. Just across, you know, the neighbors to the west of India is Pakistan, and they are Muslims. So there are unofficial statistics that many of those cows go to Pakistan, and many of the pigs from Pakistan come to India.